Well, it's no secret that we have an issue with food waste in Aotearoa, New Zealand. 15,000 tonnes of bread, 12,000 tonnes of leftovers and 5,000 tonnes of potatoes go in the bin every year. Otago University's Food Waste Innovation Project's working on ways to actively reduce food waste and repurpose things that people don't want to eat. One of their researchers is Dr. Graham Ayres. He's a specialist beer scientist who's turning his eye to replacing malted barley in beer production with discarded bread. He's also a keen home brewer and for the last 10 years has been working as a registered craft beer judge. And he's been busy judging the beers for the Dunedin Craft Beer and Food Festival, but he's with us now. Tēnā koe, Graham.
Kia ora, Catherine. How are you?
Good, thanks. Actually, did that beer festival go ahead in the end? Was it able to?
Well, the beer festival's been postponed to February, but we did actually go ahead and judge the beers, so that's all done and dusted. So great that that could go ahead, and the results will come out at the beer festival in February.
Oh, you're going to sit on it? You have to keep the ultimate secret until February.
Yes, that's right. So the festival run by OUSA here at Otago University. And so they're in charge of running the event and the competition.
How does one become a beer scientist?
Well, my journey in sort of beer science, I suppose, started by studying food science at the University of Otago. And one of my professors was Professor Jean-Pierre Dufour. He really inspired sort of my future career, as it were. He was from Belgium. He was a food engineer, a flavour chemist, but also a master brewer. And he showed me that I could combine my love of science and love of beer into a great career.
The difference between it and food science itself, is it just that it's obviously more specialist? Or
I'm very much a food scientist, a food chemist, but with a passion for beer. I suppose both fields, food science is about understanding what's in food, the components, how we make it, how we keep it safe, sustainable, tasty and fresh. And really, we're applying that same sort of science understanding about ingredients and processing just into beer.
I don't know if Spates counts, but does Dunedin have a strong history with the science of beer?
I think at the university, certainly Jean-Pierre's legacy carried on. We've always had some interest in beer and brewing science here at the University of Otago. It's always been part of our food science degree, and we have a number of people that have gone into the brewing industry from our degree, such as Kelly Ryan, as one of our former alumni.
Why are hops so interesting to beer scientists?
Oh, well, I'm fascinated with hops. I did my PhD in hops, and they're interesting because from a chemistry point of view, they're very complex. There's over 500 chemical compounds in hops, and there's all types of different varieties. There's over 100 commercial hop varieties grown around the world. So much like roses, you have different varieties that smell differently. And brewers use hops like spices in the beer, or like a chef would use spice. So brewers will use select different varieties to get distinct flavour characters in beer. So there's all kinds of different characters that hops can convey. They can give you floral characters, fruity characters, spicy characters. And so it's really fascinating to me about what are the molecules in those different hops that drive those flavours.
I would think of it a little bit like the terroir with wine and with the growing of grapes. Does it matter where the hops are grown?
Well, that's a great question, Catherine. Hops need to be grown in regions that are suitable for their growth. So they're light-sensitive plants. So in New Zealand, pretty much all of our hops are grown in the Nelson region. So that has just the right kind of climate for hops. And at the moment, but there's a lot of interest about whether we can grow hops elsewhere in New Zealand. So, and elsewhere in the world, hops are grown around about the 45th parallel, in Germany or in Oregon and Washington State in the US. So there's a lot of interest about whether we can grow hops in central Otago. And we recently had a project looking at differences in terroir, how the same hop cultivar grown in different locations is different between Tasman or central Otago. So that's really a great opportunity about whether the hop industry can start expand the growing industry and sort of increase our hop production in New Zealand.
You mentioned molecules being the interested thing, or the thing that you've got your eye on when you're looking at the hops. Which molecules are in play?
Well, when you smell a food or a flower, what you're perceiving is the what we call volatile aroma compounds that are sort of volatile. They're in the gas phase. You breathe them in through your nose, and they trigger our sense of olfaction or smell. And it's the composition of those compounds that really make up the characteristic aroma or flavor character of the hops or actual fact any food or beverage. So it's those molecules that really trigger our sense of smell, and that they are then transferred into the beer that give those distinctive characteristics, that hop flavor in beer that most consumers are sort of looking for.
And that aroma and the taste are just about one and the same thing, aren't they? They're very strongly connected.
That's right. Well, we say so. You've got your senses, as well, your sense of taste, which we detect on our tongue, on our receptors on our tongue. You've got your sense of smell in the nose. We don't actually have a flavor sense. So flavor is really the integrated perception that's only really exists when it's interpreted in our brain. It's what we call an emergent phenomenon. So our brain then takes all those signals from our tongue, from our nose, everything that's going on while we're eating, and puts them together in our brain to give us that flavor sense.
Is it individual? Is it subjective?
Well, that's an interesting question. Most people will say to you that taste or flavor is subjective, and certainly people taste and perceive things differently. We like to say everyone lives in their own individual flavor world, as it were. But in actual fact, what we do in sensory science is we apply some scientific methods in order that we can objectively measure the sensory characters of different foods. So we use trained sensory panelists to do this. So instead of making something subjective, or their preferences or what they like is subjective and individual, but we use these principles to actually measure and quantify the sensory characters. So that's how sweet something is, how bitter our beer is, and how fruity.
Is it a little bit like colour? You and I might agree that something's blue, but the exact way we see it or experience it will be different. It's just we can both agree it's blue.
Well, that's right. You tend to learn to put an object or identify an object and give it a name, and that's often due to our shared experience. We only call something blue because we share the English language. Of course, it's named other things in other languages, despite the fact we're perceiving the same wavelength of light. The sense of olfaction, for example, is quite a bit different because we have probably hundreds and thousands of different receptors. So we're each receiving a different set of signals, and the amount of signals that go to our brain is different. So you and I will have different perceptions. However, at the end of the day, if we're both tasting a strawberry, the signals going to your brain might be different, but we've both learned to call it a strawberry.
And we're both saying it's probably sweet and juicy. There are certain shared languages. I'm curious about,
that's right,
when I think of food, of course, we've got salt, fat, sweet, bitter, as you say, umami. I can't remember the entire list. With beverages, is it a slightly different list? I don't think about whether a beer's salty or not. I think about whether it's sweet. I don't think about whether it's, I can taste the fat or the umami. What are people really looking for when they're choosing a beer?
Well, consumers, we're finding, are increasingly searching for diversity. They're looking for a new flavour all the time. They're looking for different things. There's new hop varieties that are coming out, and they're looking for the new thing. And craft brewers are really always trying to push that innovation. They're always pushing the envelope to give consumers that diversity. Of course, there's a wide array of different beer styles, and each of them will have a different expected flavor profile. Usually you would characterize beer flavor having, your characteristic bitterness. Bitterness is really key in beer because it gives us that drinkability. If it's too sweet, you'll usually stop drinking. So that beer gives us that refreshing character from the bitterness. So, of course, these hazy IPAs are really huge at the moment, and that's where consumers are searching for the right balance of bitter and sweetness, and they're also searching for this big hop hit. And there, what we're finding is there are these products coming out. Brewers are really trying to pack as much hops as possible into the beer, and they're looking for distinct characteristics that are going to set them apart from their competitors. So they're looking for new hop characters. And that's where some of our research and understanding, you know, the effect of yeast and fermentation on hop flavor, and also the effect of different hop varieties, how those kind of combine to give different hop characters is really what we're kind of investigating at the moment.
On the alcohol content, it's interesting talking to winemakers that alcohol particularly affects texture as well as flavour, and they're finding a challenge, I know, to match their winemaking with some of their zero alcohol products, although some are getting better. Their rosés, for example, are getting closer. However, there's been some really good zero or low alcohol beers that don't seem radically different from their fuller alcohol cousins. And what's the role that the alcohol plays? When you want that big hop hit, does that mean it's likely to be higher alcohol content?
Not necessarily. The alcohol in the beer does have a big impact on the sensory profile of a beer. So there's a lot of technical innovation required to make these, low alcohol or zero alcohol products. But as to your question in terms of effective alcohol, you can pack a lot of hops in without high alcohol, certainly. And in some beers, you know, between 5% and 6% beers, the alcohol plays less of a role, is less noticeable by itself compared to wine, let's say. But of course, alcohol does have ethanol, as it were, does have a big impact on the mouthfulness, you know, and the character, and it acts as a sort of a flavor carrier for some of those flavor compounds and hop compounds. So if you take it out, you really do have to know what you're doing in terms of to compensate for those changes.
Back to the bread waste and the work you're doing to replace the role. Well, what is the role of malted barley? And then tell me about how bread can potentially replace it.
Well, good question. So malted barley is effectively controlled sprouting of a cereal grain. So predominantly in beer, it's barley, but it can also involve wheat and other cereals. So that germination actually generates a bunch of enzymes that the plant would use to unlock all the energy and nutrients that are stored within the grain. The grain is like an energy store or a nutrient store for a plant. So by doing that, the malted barley provides the carbohydrate from the starch that's going to be converted into sugar and then ethanol in the brewing process. And it also contains these enzymes. And it's the enzymes that breaks down the starch, which yeast can't eat. And it breaks it down into fermentable sugars, which then the yeast can convert into alcohol. So you need those two components. You need the carbohydrate source and you need the enzyme. So the malted barley is providing the enzymes, but we can actually replace some of that barley in a beer recipe with carbohydrate from rescued bread, for example, or any other carbohydrate source for that matter. So you can take out some of that barley and you can put in that carbohydrate. The enzymes will then chew up all of that carbohydrate from the bread and from the grain, convert it into sugar that then the yeast can convert into alcohol and the beer.
Where did you land on a flavour profile that worked? How much bread replacement?
Good question. We had a summer student last year. Her name was Grace Clear. She was working with the Food Waste Innovation Research team. And we were working with Citizens Collective, who were making bread beer commercially. And we wanted to test just how far we could push this. And we did actually achieve a 75% replacement of the barley with rescued bread that would have otherwise gone to waste. So we did achieve that. But at that level, it's a little bit of salt from the bread just starts to get a little touch salty in the beer. And so we kind of dialed that back. We found that a 50% was a good a sweet spot between something that worked, but also then that tasted really like a beer. And if we gave it to people blind, they really couldn't work out that it came from bread or couldn't distinguish it from a normal beer.
Well, that leaves the question of the potential for this commercially, because as we said, there's an awful lot of wasted bread. I imagine brewers could A, save money on their inputs, but B, it's another product, and you mentioned how hungry people are for new products. What do you think the potential is commercially, and are brewers interested?
Yes, great question. Brewers are interested. I think consumers are interested as well. There's a growing awareness and acceptance of these upcycled food products where waste materials, something that would have been wasted, are then reutilized. They're still nutritious products. Citizens Collective, have a successful range of beers doing well in the marketplace. And we're increasingly seeing bread beers around the world. And so I do expect people will start to look for alternative upcycled products. And the brewing industry has always been interested in innovation and new things. And they're also looking for new ingredients and new marketing angles that the consumers are interested in. So I do see a great future in this. I do see people put it in. And by doing so, we really hope that this will form a demonstration for people to think about what they can upcycle or utilize waste streams to put into these products to make quality flavors and products, but that we can tackle some of these food waste issues that we have in New Zealand.
Thank you, Graham, and all the best for the Dunedin Craft Beer and Food Festival, now going to happen in February. Graham's got to keep his secrets to himself between now and then. Dr. Graham Ayres of Otago University's Food Waste Innovation Projects, working on these things.